Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, your source for breaking news, business trends, and economic forecasts here and abroad that impact one-third of America's economy. And now your hosts, Lou Weiss and Tim Grady.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. I'm Tim Grady, and hopefully I've got my co-host on the line, Lou Weiss. I happen to be in heavy traffic in Atlanta, and Lou's in his cushy office in New Jersey. Lou, how you doing?
I'm in a very cushy office. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you just fine. I don't know if we have Dr. Chris Keel on the line with us yet or not, but he's going to be joining us.
You do. I'm not in Lou's cushy office, but I'm in my own cushy office. So.
Oh, good. Hey. Okay.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm good.
Good, good. Did you warm up your humorous side for today?
No, I'm going to be all depressing and morose today. You know, it's time to bring out the black hat and the gloom, doom, and despair. I am, otherwise they're going to cancel my economics permit, so.
Oh, my God.
Economists are not allowed to give out too much good information, huh?
No. They don't call us the dismal science for nothing. That's important.
Well, so okay, what's happening in the dismal science of the credit managers index?
Well, that part is not depressing. So we'll start with that, and we'll find something depressing to talk about later. Usually Lou brings up at least 10 things that make us, slightly insane. So I'm counting on him to do it again. So we'll go from there.
Excuse me, Chris. I a little humor before we start the show. Your report started off with "spoke a little too soon." What does that mean?
Well, it just meant that, I was trying to be a little over-optimistic and said, two months is a trend. Well, 2 months really isn't a trend, and we didn't really hit the trend. But, I was grasping at straws. What can I say? I know it upsets you so when we go in reverse, so I didn't want to make a big deal out of it. But since you brought it up, so much for the, I was going to try to be all lighthearted, but, too late now. So, actually, it's not quite as bad as all that, but we'll talk about it.
Okay, let's go. Tell us the latest and greatest and less.
Okay, well, what we had seen for 2 months was a kind of modest upturn 1 month over the next. And so we were thinking, maybe we'll actually hit three in a row. We have seen a couple of months where we've seen upturns, and then we get a bit of a reversal in the third. But something that is frequently mentioned by the purchasing managers guys is that these are month-to-month changes. And even though you get numbers that are down from the month before, they can still be very high compared to where they've been in the past 6 months or the past year or the past 5 years. And that's kind of in the story for both the PMI and the CMI. We are looking in the favorable factors at numbers that are still in the 60s. We have none really that have trended into the 50s. They're still very, very solid. And again, like the PMI, anything over 50 with the CMI is expansion. So when you're looking at numbers in the 60s, there's no reason to be distraught at all. Even when you look at the unfavorable factors, which have been a little less robust, they're still predominantly in the 50s or at least the high 40s. So we're not seeing a real reversal. So it's important to kind of keep things in perspective. It's a little down from where it was the month before, but frankly, the last couple of months before this one, we were at records. We hadn't seen these numbers for 2 or 3 years. So getting down a bit is still sort of like, what do you mean we didn't win by 100 points? We did last week, and it's like, yes, I know, but you still won, so hush. We quibble, it's like it's not enough that we win the game. We have to, stomp the opponent into oblivion. And this month, not so much Oblivion, but we still won.
You know, I have to say that last month was 60.8, and I think this month was 59.3 on the ISM. And Tim and I have a gag that we pull back and forth, that anything within 1 point of a 60 to 61 or 60 to 59, and if it falls in anywhere between that, I'm not sure that anybody really understands the, is it up or is it down? Or unless,
well,
which
it's
is your
of,
expression.
Well, yeah, it kind of comes down to, excuse me, the detail, because what changes those numbers for both the ISM and for us is the little sub-indices. So you add those all up and you get the total numbers. And where the significance comes is in those smaller numbers, because, like, for example, with the CMI, we're going to track things like dollar collections. Very important to a credit manager. That's their ability to collect on the debt, collect on the credit that they've issued. Even if all the other positive numbers are positive and that one isn't, that's not a good sign for a credit manager. That's a warning that things are going to get ugly sooner than later, because there's a progression to what happens to make a credit manager unhappy. You know, the first thing that happens is, my dollar collections are down. I'm starting to get people who are slow paying their credit. This is not good, because next thing happens is collections. Oh, man, that's not good. Then comes bankruptcies. Oh, man, that's really not good. So you're ending up looking at all of these things kind of in order. And for several months last year, we had kind of an alternating situation. 1 month, dollar collections would be down, and you'd see more stress when it came to slow pays. Then they'd recover, and things would be better, and dollar collections would be up, and slow pays would be down. Then it would reverse again, and you'd find dollar collections down, slow pays up. It just kept in this pattern for months. And as long as you continued to get a recovery, it kept you from panicking. Where we would become worried is that, oh, no, this is the third month in a row, fourth month in a row, fifth month in a row, the dollar collections are down. We're now seeing month after month after month of slow pays. And a credit manager simply runs out of room. You know, they get to the point where saying, you've been slow paying me now for 6 months. I can't do that anymore. You owe me money, and I'm going to go collect on it. So I've given you as much rope as I can give you. The next call you're getting is from Guido, and I expect to be paid. And then if the company says, oh, man, I can't pay, man, okay, then your next call is going to be to Dewey, Cheatham, and Howell, because you're going into bankruptcy. And so that's the trick. Sometimes that switch from 61 to 59 is meaningless, because it's changed in something that's extremely volatile, like we measure sales. God, sales are all over the place, and they're seasonal. I mean, you know, our index tends to be kind of heavy when it comes to, particularly in the service sector, when it comes to things like retail and construction. Well, we know that every year you're going to get a lot more volatility in retail at the end of the year. And you get a lot of kind of desperate retail activity trying to make a big score for Christmas. And then, you know, the piper comes to pay, and it gets ugly in the first part of the year. Other sectors, you know, they have their own rhythm. Manufacturing tends to be a little bit heavier in the spring and the fall. You know, so a lot of it is timing. And for the person who's looking at this just kind of casually, like, hey, how are the numbers? Well, you kind of have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt and say, okay, what month is it? Did it matter that April Fool's Day was the same day as Easter? Maybe. You know, I mean, I'm sure it opened up lots of possibilities for you and your colleague. I just want to know which one of you is wearing a yellow bunny jacket, but that's just curiosity.
I'm wearing a yellow and green Hawaiian shirt today.
Excellent. See, this is the perfect juxtaposition of climates, because you're wearing Green Bay Packers colors on a Hawaiian shirt.
Okay. Not that I'm into sports, but continue.
Well, no, but see, that just gives you the contrast. You have 85 degrees below zero, and you have the beach. I mean, so you've got everything covered.
That's right.
Well, all that being said about the credit managers index, Chris, the thing that's playing on our heads at the moment, Lou and I have been following the tariffs and what kind of terror the tariffs are going to give us.
Exactly, and we talked about that at the last time we spoke, and suggested that it was going to be exempted to death, which is exactly what's happened. And there's kind of a pattern with the Trump administration so far, which is not unusual in terms of politics. It just takes a while to kind of get used to it, where you start off with something that is very kind of bold and headline-y. I think the thing that's been odd about this administration, as it has played out, it never stops campaigning, which again isn't terribly unusual, but this is kind of campaign tactic. You take something and you make a very bold initial statement because it's a campaign and you just want people to remember it for a few weeks, a few months, and then the election's over and you're in office and nobody's paying any attention to you anymore. So you just go back and revise everything you said during the campaign. Now we're seeing it in the middle of a presidency. So the original idea, tariffs on everybody. Okay, except Canada and Mexico. Well, and then South Korea and Brazil and Germany and Turkey. And the Netherlands, and oh, and by the way, if you're a manufacturer and you can't find that steel here, fine, you can buy it without a tariff. And, you know, pretty soon we'll give it to Japan. So at the end of the day, who are the tariffs against? China. Okay, they're 2.4% of our steel imports. And your point is? Well, you haven't done anything to really help the steel industry. And frankly, it's too late to put tariffs on China because you already did. I mean, the steel tariffs have been in place against these guys for almost 10 years now. So it's just one of those things where it made for a very good initial. And there's still a chance, you know, because all of these exemptions were contingent. And they're basically saying, if you don't do what we want you to do, on something else, you know, we'll reimpose the tariffs. So it does provide leverage down the road. I mean, if right now virtually everything in the world is being connected to Mexico, so I've gotten the impression that if the Cowboys don't win the Super Bowl, then somehow that's going to affect the immigration wall. But I'm not, you know, so.
Well, to your point today about 25 minutes ago, Donald Trump, Mr. President, has now made an announcement that he's going to be putting U.S. military forces on the southern border. So that's really going to help our situation in terms of immigration.
There's another example of a big, bold statement that if you're not really paying attention, military troops are already on the border. That was authorized in the middle of the Obama administration, and it hasn't changed. So it's like announcing, by God, today is Tuesday. Yep, you're absolutely right. You're sure right. I that's not fake news. It's true. Today is Tuesday. But it was Tuesday before you became president. It'll be Tuesday after you've left office. So, but if you're not paying attention, then it's like, wow, this is a big move. Well, not particularly. You know, it's kind of business as usual. And what's happening with the business community is that they're finally kind of settling into this pattern, and they kind of go like, okay, we're not expecting big radical moves now. You know, even with the tariffs that are being discussed between China and the U.S., well, there's all of this discussion about what we're going to not import and what the tariff will be over this, that, and the other, and China's responding in kind, except that it's all, at least majority of it's peripheral to both economies. And in the middle of this, the actual negotiations are taking place over what really matters to the U.S. and China, which is U.S. business investment in China. And the Chinese want more of it, and we're like, okay, but you can't, if you want more of our investment, you cannot keep American companies from owning their materials and their assets in China. So quit requiring a Chinese partner. And China at this point is like, well, okay, we'll maybe think about it. So in the midst of all of the hoopla, there's kind of the real work that's being done off to the side. And once again, that's not unusual. I mean, it's most of the work of trade and government and all that is, you know, it's taking place in side rooms while somebody is thundering away and giving a speech, keeping the folks at home happy, because right now the Chinese are speechifying like crazy, assuring the public that they're not giving in to the evil Americans, when in fact they're giving in to the evil Americans, because the Chinese want something, and they're like, God, I don't care if the Americans own their own car company, you know, the days where we had to protect our industry are over. If that's what the U.S. wants, give it to them. But in the meantime, they're telling their people, no, we know we would never do this. No, no, no. And the average Chinese are like, oh, they never do this. Whatever. Next time, read the whole paper. So,
Chris, let me ask you, because this is the critical question. What's going to happen in regards to the tariff, the steel and aluminum tariffs? Because in the past, the four or five presidents in the past, it's always failed. What's
right.
going to happen now? Is President Trump going to learn by the failures of the previous presidents, or is he just going to buffoon his way through this new level of tariff issues?
You know, I don't think he has to do either one, because what you've now gotten is tariff as negotiation position. You know, it's they don't need to be removed because they're not really in place. You know, it's the vast majority of people I'm talking to in the steel business are basically saying, well, we're not seeing much of a reaction, and if we are, we're discovering that the steel company that's raising their prices, they're not raising them because of the tariffs. They're raising them because the tariffs gives them an excuse to, and they're coming back and saying, yeah, it's the tariffs. Yep, that's why. Yep, it's tariffs. But you're not paying any
Chris,
more for your steel than they were yesterday.
Chris, I got to take objection to your comment, because that's not what's happening. There are steel companies in this country today that are now paying higher tariffs, and I can speak for a bunch of them, but I won't give names, that are being affected as of a week ago Friday, who are being negatively impacted by a 25% increase. I can also tell you that there are steel mills in this country who effectively the same Friday raised their prices
mm-hmm.
just short of the tariff so that they can make a greater profit but yet be underneath the tariff numbers. It's
no,
happening.
But what you're seeing, what you're seeing, Lou, is the fact that these exemptions were not instantaneous, and everybody is making as much as they can out of it while they can. So the exemption for South Korea hasn't gone into place yet, but is scheduled to. The exemptions for some of the Europeans should be going in this week. Japan hasn't gotten its exemption yet, but it will. So what you've got is a period where the exemption has been promised, the exemption has been acknowledged, and but bureaucracies being what they are, there's that period of time where it's like, yep, we announced it, it's going to be a month or 2 months or 3 months before it's implemented, and everybody is moving quickly, because if you're a domestic steel producer, that may be telling you you've got a 3 month, 2 month window to raise your prices before these exemptions are granted. You also have the fact that you've got companies or countries that are getting these exemptions who are not absolutely certain that they're going to be included in the detail of that exemption, because the complexity of it is that going in, for example, the South Korean exemptions, they broke that down by grade of steel and half a dozen other factors. And people are now going through the legalese going, okay, does that count chrome plate? Is that, does that count pipeline? Is that, what is this in here? You know, and so it's as is often the case, this is now in the hands of the lawyers, and everybody just knows to grab their rear with both hands and hang on until the legal guys have had their fun.
Well, what you're talking about is the harmonized codes and how they affect different metal families and metal shapes and so on. The point is that, matter of fact, we had a visitation at All Metals and Forge Group about 2 weeks ago from one of the major U.S. metal corporations, and I'll be happy to share the name, but I won't give names of individuals, and that was Timken Steel, who came to visit our company. They are a supplier of ours, and they came to us and told us that effective on the 23rd, which was the day that the tariff went into effect, they were raising their prices. He also continued to tell us that, kind of whispering it, saying also that, I'm sorry, but next week we're going to raise our prices a second time. They're taking advantage. So where is the benefit to the American manufacturer, the American public? I mean, we had Mr. Secretary Wilbur Ross sat on television, half asleep, holding a Coca-Cola can and saying that this was only going to cost 0.04 cents per can. Meanwhile, it was $200 billion.
I don't quibble you with it at all over the fact that this is not good. I'm just pointing out that what we're in the midst of is a game. And what you're seeing, you know, and beyond all that, of course, part of the reason that there's been some increase is that not every country is going to get an exemption. We get a certain amount of steel from Russia. They're not exempt. We're not getting any more from China. They're not exempt. Not that we got a whole lot from them. But when you add up the countries that we are going to continue to discriminate against, it gets up close to 11-12%. And that's not an insignificant amount. It's a lot less than 100. But I think the challenge of this is that you get caught in a vice. And we have, for example, my company does a lot with transportation companies. And anyone in your industry understands the game that's played there. The very second that oil prices go up, you get hit with a fuel surcharge. You know full well that that company did not buy all of the fuel that it uses that day. And you know full well that company had hundreds of millions of gallons of fuel that had been purchased at a lower price. But you're going to get hit with the fuel charge that instant because it's an opportunity to make a little money. Because, you know, hey, not my fault, blame OPEC. It's like, well, yeah, but it is your fault that you're charging me more and more than you paid for that fuel. It's the game. And one of the things that we're dealing with now is the game in commodities and supply. I mean, if I were a shareholder in a steel company and they said, well, we're not going to react until we actually have all, I'd be looking at them like, well, you do what you want, but I'm just going to shift my money over here to Apple. It's like, you're not acting in my best interest right now, so see ya. It's it's just kind of the nature of the game. What makes me angriest about the whole tariff discussion is that you've created so much turmoil for the manufacturer at precisely the moment that you should have been letting them really build and really start taking off, because ostensibly, from an economic perspective, this was all about creating jobs. And so you put 6 million jobs at risk to save 200,000. And that's, and there was, I mean, it's just, I'm not sure if you guys were talking about it or somebody else was, but looking at a new modern plant that was going to do more business because of the tariffs, and they were going to hire 3 people because it's an automated plant.
Well, today in the news, U.S. Steel has finally decided that they are opening up a old plant and bringing back, quote unquote, 1,000 new jobs. But
right.
that's going to last as long as this tariff lasts. But the tariff is not going to last long, because somewhere along the line they're going to have to back off.
They probably will, and beyond that, I'm always deeply mistrustful of somebody who said, "Ooh, this changed, I'm going to do this." My guess would be that major decisions like that have been made a long time ago, and not really contingent on what tariff or tax was in place. The other thing that you guys have pointed out before is that if you don't bring in the raw steel, you bring in parts. And that's a way to get around some of the steel restrictions. And that doesn't do the manufacturer any good either. But your point was well taken earlier, which is that we've tried it before, and inevitably the tariffs get pulled. And frankly, an awful lot of U.S. steelmakers and steelmakers around the world, I just kind of look at this and say, worst case scenario, I have to wait this out for 2 or 3 years, because maybe not even that long. I mean, if there's a big switch this coming midterm election, I mean, it changes the dynamic. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, if you get different people in office, then you get different policies. And one of the overarching concerns, just taking this out of just steel tariffs alone, one of the concerns overall that business has with politics right now is that it is so partisan that you get no consensus on anything. And it becomes, there's no way to protect any piece of legislation. You know, the health care, all Democrat. You know, the tax bill, all Republican. So if the balance shifts, like when the Republicans took over, all of a sudden health care is completely up in the air and being shredded. If the Democrats win, well, take a look at the tax cuts and look at them wistfully, because there was not one Democrat that voted for them. And you'll end up changing that completely as well. Business community says, look, when there's a little bit of both parties involved, we can take it to the bank. And we know that it's not likely to be completely thrown out just because there's a change in leadership.
Well, Chris, I wish I could stay for the conclusion of the show. I know you and Lou will have a great discussion. I'll have to step back in and listen to it after it's put online. I've got to step out to another appointment, but I appreciate being with you, and we'll talk to you again later.
We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Tim. We'll be talking to you.
All right, Lou, it's yours from here on.
Yeah, I'll beat him up a little more.
Right.
So we're impervious, you know. We're pretty hidebound bunch.
Yeah, I know. Unless. So, talking about politics, which I didn't bring up, I think you just brought it up. Where do you think this is going to go in November? Yeah, you did. Where do you think this is going to go in November? The way things are geared for the moment.
It's one of those things that is reminding us every 2 to 4 years that politics is ultimately local. Because if you looked at the national numbers, if this were a national election and we had the usual panoply of presidential candidates, I think you'd be seeing a whole lot more conversation about the groundswell of this and the groundswell of that, because some will try to make this kind of a referendum on the current administration. That's traditional. The midterms played that role for Obama twice. You know, they've played it for every president. But at the end of the day, these are local elections. And even if the Republicans as a whole are unpopular, even if Trump is a whole unpopular, when it comes down to it, you've got somebody in Montana voting for their senator. You've got somebody in Illinois voting for their representative. And it's the relationship they have with that particular politician. I mean, it's been a phenomenon for years that, in general, Americans do not like Congress. I mean, the last survey that I saw, they ranked them slightly above silverfish and used car salesmen. So, if you looked at these polls, you'd be saying, well, good Lord, every one of these guys is going to lose their seat because all Americans hate them. But then, see, I'm not the only one that uses unless, because then you get the unless. Unless the local population likes that guy or woman. And so every year it's like, oh, I hate all them congressmen except for old Dick. I love Dick. Dick's a good guy. I've seen Dick down at the VFW post, and he's just a hell of a guy. Dick wins. Doesn't matter what party he is. So I think we're going to see some change, particularly in those districts that are kind of waffly, but, and this gets into the whole issue of gerrymandering, there hardly are waffly districts anymore because they're all very carefully constructed to include just Republicans in this district and just Democrats in this district.
We do have a new issue this year that I think is going to have a major impact. And I don't think that either party should diminish the potential effect. And that is the students and gun control. I think that's going to have a major effect. And what's your thought on that?
No, I agree completely, and for a couple of different reasons. I think one of the gun control issue is highly emotional, and it certainly galvanized an awful lot of people in the country. One of the ironies has always been that if you look at national polls, you know, 70%, 80% want control of automatic and semi-automatic weapons. Even the majority of people who are in the NRA, you know, I live in Kansas, for crying out loud. This is hunting and fishing territory. And most of the people I know who are NRA members are like, I don't get it. You know, I mean, I do in an abstract sense, but I have a hunting rifle. I have shotgun, I have weapons that I keep around the house for, you know, I don't go hunting with an AK-47, you know what I mean? It's an AR-15 is inappropriate for quail. So it's one of those things where it's, the issue has kind of transcended into almost a discussion of a new generation. The millennial was and has been disparaged for being just kind of self-absorbed and out of it and not particularly connected. And now you've got Generation Z who seems to be rebelling against the millennial and are much more engaged and much more serious. I have a lot of friends who are teachers, and they're like, God, you would believe the difference in just 3 or 4 years. And the interesting thing is that they're not just protesting. They're like, getting people out to vote and putting their emphasis on to how to exercise real honest to God power. I think it's kind of a force that hasn't quite found its focus yet. And the big question will be, beyond gun control, will one party or the other be able to kind of wrap their arms around this generation? I think when you add in immigration, particularly the DACA thing, and you add in gun control, and you add in other issues that matter to the young, you begin to see a new platform that one or the other parties, right now the Democrats have a better shot at it than Republicans, but not necessarily depending on how each party deals with this. And it becomes an honest to God political force that's going to play a role in some particularly urban areas and suburban areas around the country.
Well, I agree with you, and I think the last time that we saw the youth of the country stand up to be counted was obviously during the Vietnam War, and mm-hmm. it was probably the last time. But they're doing it now with a different force. They're not doing it with violence. They're doing it with their intellect and their sensitivity. And it's really amazing to listen to some of these kids speak up. And frankly, and you're right about the voting, getting people registered. The registrations are very high, and they're not going in the direction of the Republicans. So, and you don't hear a lot of Republicans talking right now about what's going on in the country. They're kind of hiding out in the scrub bush area and not really taking a stand and hoping this goes away. It's not going away.
And I think it's interesting too, as you look around the country, where you're kind of getting the reactions, because again, I'm in the center of the country, very conservative politically, and mm-hmm. Republicans in Kansas really don't have to play much of a game against Democrats. They're just, it's not a very strong party here. And so the Republicans in Kansas end up discussing in ways that Republicans elsewhere don't. And there's a surprisingly strong, I guess you'd call it moderate Republican positioning here, where you've got gun owners and gun supporters who are saying, would somebody please shut up, these idiots who are attacking the kids and all this sort of stuff, because we're gun owners. We, you know, hunting and fishing is like a legacy in Kansas, but it's hunting and fishing. You know, there's never been any objection to, you know, being responsible with weapons and gun safety classes and all this sort of stuff. It's what it was designed for. And you get people who are just looking at the screamy memes on the coasts going, what's wrong with you? There is no hunter alive that needs a bump stock. There is no hunter alive that wants to go out and hunt deer with a machine gun. You know, we don't like those people. They scare us. You know, so it's one of those things where within the Republican Party itself, I think there's a significant number of people that have a different point of view, but it doesn't get picked up necessarily by some of the national screamers. I mean, even on things like immigration, Kansas, I keep coming back to Kansas because I know it, but it's, you know, you've got a state that is, where Republicans are more or less in favor of immigration, despite the fact that we have an attorney general who's obsessed with it, but this is farm country.
Right.
And all the guys out in Western Kansas are like, Attorney General, sir, do you know where our workers come from? You know, it's like, are you trying to shut down the cattle industry out here? You know, one of the states that was for opening up to Cuba before anybody else was Kansas. It's like, we sell wheat, buddy. That's about all we got. And you start cutting off markets and we're in trouble. So you'll go out to Western Kansas expecting the most conservative bastions on the world. It's like they're pro-Cuba, pro-immigration, and wonder what the deal is with gun control. You know, it's kind of like what they are is practical. You know, it's like, please don't interfere with my ability to make money and keep my farm and the family.
Well, we did get way, way off the topic of the credit manager's report,
you
and
think?
I really have enjoyed.
You think?
Yeah. We do that a lot with you. You know, we get off onto other tangents, and that's okay, because I think that all these topics
are, my life, yeah.
are, They're all extremely important, and I really do appreciate your intellect and wisdom and your experience in the financial side of our country, which all of these things pertain to. And
they do indeed,
Chris. Yeah, without a doubt. And if we leave it out, I think that's a mistake also. So I do appreciate your comments and commentary. So to wrap up this segment, is there anything that you would like to talk about yet about credit, or have we done it all?
Oh, I think we've pretty well covered it. The one thing that to kind of bring up, just a reiteration of an earlier point, and that is just make sure that when you look at these numbers, you put them in some kind of context, because whenever I release the report to people, I'm always urging them to go back and look year over year, 2 or 3 years back, and look that over this 4 or 5 year period, we've seen a really nice progression up into higher and higher numbers. We don't see 30s anymore. We don't see 40s anymore. The same thing's happened with ISM. And even if you get months where it dips a little, it's no cause for alarm, and it only becomes an issue when you suddenly start to see those numbers get lower and lower and lower, and they don't bounce back. And we've not seen that now for several years. So we can continue
beautiful
to be
numbers.
In a good mood.
Beautiful numbers. And why don't you give us your URL address so that our listeners can tap into your numbers without all of your dialogue.
There you go. That's the best way to do this by far.
Right.
Our
right.
website is www.armada-intel.com. So that's armada-intel.com. Or they can contact me directly by email, and that's just chris.keel, so chris.keel at armadaci.com.
Chris, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for being with us today, and we'll be in touch with you next month.
Very good. See you later, Lou. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. And for our guest, I just want to bring up that we will be back next Tuesday with Manufacturing Talk Radio at mfgtalkradio.com. And I want to remind you about our relatively new show that's going into its fifth month, and that's WAM, Women and Manufacturing. That's W-A-M, sorry, it's Women and A-N-D Manufacturing, mfg.com, and that's on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock. And we're looking forward to all of you listening to us. We got some great women on the show talking to accomplished women from accomplished women. So we'll tune in. You'll tune in next week, Tuesday and or Wednesday. Thank you all for listening today, and have a good day.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at mfgtalkradio.com.